This is Allison Bailey, Chair of the Cardiovascular Management Section Leadership Council at the American College of Cardiology. The Cardiovascular Management Section is very pleased to host this podcast series, Practice Made Perfect, which will focus on non-clinical competencies related to leadership skills, professional identity, operational skills, and personal balance. We hope you'll join us every other week as we learn from experts in the field who will remind us that practice really does make perfect. Welcome. This is Allison Bailey, and I'm excited and honored to welcome Dr. Nancy Albert, Dr. Susan Smythe, and Dr. Bob Harrington onto the show today. These individuals have been successful in the research arena, among many other areas in cardiovascular medicine, throughout their careers, and we'll be talking with them about what that means today. So first, I'd like to welcome Dr. Nancy Albert to the show. Dr. Albert is an Associate Chief Nursing Officer for Cleveland Clinic's Office of Nursing Research and Innovation and a Clinical Nurse Specialist in Cleveland Clinic's Kauffman Center for Heart Failure in the Heart, Vascular, and Thoracic Institute. Dr. Albert has been instrumental in leading nursing research at her institution as well as her own research interests in heart failure. Nancy, I'm so glad you could join us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also joining us is Dr. Susan Smythe. Dr. Smythe is a physician scientist and has been involved in the design, implementation, and dissemination of many research programs in both clinical medicine as well as bench studies. She's mentored many young scholars through the T32 training program and clinical fellowships. She serves as the chief of the Division of Cardiovascular Medicine at the University of Kentucky, as well as the director of the Gill Heart and Vascular Institute. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity. It really is exciting to be able to talk about successful research careers.
And last, but certainly not least, is Dr. Bob Harrington. Dr. Harrington is an interventional cardiologist and the Arthur L. Bloomfield Professor of Medicine and Chairman of the Department of Medicine at Stanford University. Dr. Harrington was previously the Richard Sean Stack Distinguished Professor and the Director of the Duke Clinical Research Institute at Duke University. His research has been extensively funded through the NIH, NIA, and other peer-reviewed industries, as well as private industry. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to it.
Well, I'd like to thank you all again for joining us today and sharing your passion and success in navigating a successful career that incorporates research. I'm so impressed by all of you, like I know our listeners are, yet you are all doing very different things in research. Susan, maybe we can start with you and you can tell us how you got started in research and what your group studies and how that functions.
Absolutely. I'm a physician scientist by training. I did a combined MD-PhD program at the University of North Carolina. And then in my cardiology fellowship, did dedicated research time and first started out with an NIH-funded basic science laboratory. And one of the things that I certainly will talk about today is how my career has evolved. And at this point, we really do research that cuts across the entire translational spectrum. So over the last 20 years, you know, we started with very basic scientific investigations that we incorporated more preclinical animal models, and then we're able to do investigator-initiated clinical trials off of our interests in thrombosis and vascular inflammation. And now my latest NIH funding is actually in implementation science. And so, you know, I think that folks really do need to be aware of the fact that over your career, things can evolve and, you know, take advantage of opportunities that come your way, you know, provided they're within the overall spectrum of the things that you're passionate about.
Wonderful. It's great to hear about how change occurs in all aspects of medicine. And I know you're also a practicing clinician, so you've been able to marry both of these into your career. Bob, how about you? How did you become involved in a successful research program, and how have you used this to your advantage in your career?
Sure. I started out as a resident at University of Massachusetts that became interested in thrombosis and spent a fair bit of time as a resident doing some research with one of the hematologists at UMass Worcester. From there, I went off to Duke University, where I thought I was going to be a basic scientist. I thought I was going to study the molecular basis of clotting, particularly around the role of the adhesive proteins in clotting. And then I met Rob Califf. And one of the lessons is to pay attention to serendipity. And Rob really talked to me about the role that thrombosis was going to play in cardiology. And after talking with him and doing some thinking about how I wanted to bring together interventional cardiology and research, I ended up spending a couple of years in his research group at what was then called the Duke Data Bank for Cardiovascular Diseases, and really learned how to be a clinical researcher with epidemiology and biostatistics and trial design. And so that's how I got involved.
Wow, that's great. And what a vision into the future, talking about thrombosis early in your career. Nancy, I know your focus is a bit different, but can you tell us how you got started down a research pathway and what that entails now with your career?
Sure. My story is a little bit more of a winding road than the other two. Back in 1991, I was the nurse manager in our coronary intensive care unit on the main campus of Cleveland Clinic. And as a manager, I wanted to purchase a product that I thought would really benefit patients and increase nurse efficiency. The medical director at the time wanted me to conduct research first to assess the efficacy of the product before we actually implemented it. So I wasn't daunted. I decided to take on a research study, never having done that before. I realized that I was a curious person and had a lot of questions and became really interested in developing a program of research. So I was really happy that early on my job allowed me to pursue individual research studies along the way. Over time, I went back, got the PhD, and really took on a job working for cardiothoracic surgery and not only ran a large database that we have here, but also helped with the clinical trials and also the physicians' clinical studies. Today, my research involves biobehavioral responses of patients with heart failure and their outcomes, most often hospitalization and mortality. I'm a quantitative nurse scientist, and I conduct randomized controlled trials, comparative designs, and descriptive research. I also have a strong interest in research involved in optimizing medical therapies and helping find out how we could better adhere to national guidelines, especially related to medications. The final part of my job is I mentor and coach nurses interested in conducting research throughout our healthcare system. Most are clinical nurses that are working in bedside capacities, and they really have no research background at all. So it's a lot of fun for me to help turn on that light bulb and get them excited about research and then help guide them through research projects.
Well, I just love hearing all of your background because it reminds me that we all have these different paths, but they all really involve three things: clinical practice and improving the care that we deliver, mentorship, and then trying to make the research that we're doing the best thing we can. I'm going to shift our focus just a little bit since we understand what you all do. Bob, maybe you could take this question. I know things are changing from funding sources and the way research was done in the past and now. How do you navigate the financial aspects of getting funding for projects in 2020? And how do you interact with industry? Do you have any tips you can share for our listeners?
I've been fortunate to have secured research funding both for myself and my research groups, first at Duke and now at Stanford, through a variety of sources, including federal sources, foundation sources, and industry sources. I only half jokingly say that the only bad money in academic medicine is no money. And so you really do have to think about who you can approach to find the sources of funding, to fund you to do the things that you want to do that you find interesting. I think the important thing when you are working with your industry colleagues is that while you want there to be a collaboration, you also need to insist on certain things being very independent. You really need to be independent in your ability to analyze data. You really need to be independent in your ability to write papers. Yes, you write them in a collaborative way. Yes, you are open to reviews and edits from your co-authors. But at the end of the day, you really have to insist upon a level of independence that allows you to speak freely and to comment freely on the data that you're in the process of collecting. So collaborative, yes, but independence is really important.
Great advice and tips. Nancy, you're not only involved in clinical research, but you're also involved in the administration of research. What does that entail, and how does a structured program help the entire research team deliver the products they need to?
Well, thanks for asking that. So, you know, it really entails developing a foundation for nursing science. And I'm very fortunate that our nursing leadership really believes in the value of research. And because of that, it allows our team and department to exist. I have five PhD RNs that serve the entire health system. We have money in the budget to be able to afford our own biostatistician and statistical analyst support. Because of all the rich databases at Cleveland Clinic, we could do big data research. When I have funded studies, I use that money to allow me to hire research nurses to help actually carry out the studies and to help with data collection. So there's a lot of different ways that having a structured department help out, but it's allowing me to have the right resources in place and also to take advantage of the resources of the health system, whether it's the library, the art department, all those other people and teams that can help bring the research to life or and help with presentation, publication, et cetera.
Great. And, you know, just another way to highlight how I think we really do excel in cardiology is focusing on part of a larger team where it's multidisciplinary and really does span across many fields.
I agree. And I think one of the beauties of having a foundation like this is that we're really good at collaborating with other team members, whether it's physicians or dietitians or PharmDs. And so it allows us to enrich our studies because we're getting the viewpoint of multiple team members.
More minds are always better. Susan, I know your life's a little different in that you run a basic science lab for part of your research and spend a lot of time on mentorship and education. What's your secret for making this work in your career?
I think it starts with having a passion for the work that you do. And so for me as a graduate student, I was working with antibodies, 10E5 and 73, that targeted the platelet fibrinogen receptor, alpha integrin alpha-2B-beta-3. And as I was thinking through my clinical training and in my residency about subspecialty training, what really sort of solidified cardiology for me was that as an intern, that antibody 73 was FDA approved as abciximab, as a sort of humanized version of the antibody that I had used in experiments as a graduate student. And I recognized that, you know, I had this huge interest in understanding platelet physiology and the way in which we were going to target platelets therapeutically really was in cardiology to prevent thrombosis. And so that then led me to cardiology as a discipline. It really drove a huge amount of what I do from a research perspective because we then, in addition to studying the basic biology of platelets, set up preclinical models to test whether these proteins were involved in other things like vascular inflammation. And then started incorporating, you know, other signaling pathways into some of those models. And then, you know, as I mentioned, did investigator-initiated trials of looking at the effects of antiplatelets and things like pneumonia. And so, you know, for me, it's been that passion to understand the role of platelets and their interface with vascular inflammation that really has driven our basic research and allowed us to translate it into different perspectives. The addition of the mentoring and education really came after I had established our research base and with the recognition that throughout all of this, mentorship is incredibly important. I am fortunate to have, I think, two of the most phenomenal mentors that exist. And Leslie Parisi, who was my PhD mentor, went on to be chair of biochemistry at UNC and now is a dean at the University of Vermont. And then Barry Kohler, who was my mentor during fellowship. And recognizing what they had done for my career, I felt it was very important to establish training programs and mentorship programs as my career evolved. And so, you know, really wanting to give back to the scientific community all that I had received.
Well, that's wonderful. So really finding your passion and then that desire to pay it forward. So I think we've gotten great advice here and some wonderful tips from y'all tonight. And I'd like to ask each of you, what's your best piece of advice you'd give our listeners who are starting out in their career or maybe trying to transition into a career that involves research? Bob, maybe you could answer this question first for us.
Sure. I'm going to say a couple of things. First off, get excellent clinical training because the essence of a clinical researcher is being an excellent clinician. So get great clinical training. Think about combining that clinical training with didactic training in one of the quantitative sciences, because bringing together quantitative science with biology, which is really what clinicians are, biologists, is a powerful combination. Second, really look at research as being foundational and an obligation to being a clinical doctor or a clinician just more generally, that it really is part of our obligation to help answer questions that we don't know. And then the third is to keep your eyes open to serendipity, because things will happen to you along a career that if you're open to that opportunity, you may find yourself doing something really exciting and potentially impactful.
Great advice. Nancy, how about your thoughts here?
Well, I love Bob's answer. I would say in a very similar vein, we need to be inquisitive and we need to take the steps to get answers to questions that we have. For people that are new in the world of research, they need to collaborate with a seasoned mentor who could really guide them to help learn the nuts and bolts of different types of research design so that the person can learn what's the best match for them. Are they a qualitative scientist, a quantitative scientist? And I think one of the messages I constantly teach new people is that they need to remember that the research project is not completed until they disseminate their work. And so you need to build a good publishing history and build on the work that you're doing. And so develop a path of research. Try to stay within one theme, at least for a little while before you veer off, so that you can dig deeper and get some depth and breadth to what you're working on versus only skimming the surface on multiple different types of projects.
Okay, again, great, great tips for our listeners. And then Susan, last but not least, what would you like to add?
So I have 10 tips for early stage investigators who are thinking about a career in research. And so it's start to find your passion and make that the focus of your work. Remember, there are tremendous opportunities. There are so many scientific questions that we need to address. 3, know what's available at your own institution. For example, if you have a CTSA funded program, that brings tremendous resources around mentoring and training. 4, create a mentoring team that has individuals who are going to help you at all different levels, both those that are going to inspire you to do more, but also those that are going to support you in getting the work done. And so, I think you have to have a really holistic approach to your mentor team. 5, clearly articulate your goals. I've too often seen early career individuals who, in an attempt to be flexible, really come across as a little bit undecided or uncommitted. You want to really clearly articulate your goals and create an action plan that, follows through on that. 6, in your plan, thinking about what supplemental training and additional skills, those that Bob and Nancy have been talking about, are very important, that you get that additional training so that your research really can be at high quality from a scientific merit perspective. 7, remember that extramural dollars buy out your research time. And so while in the beginning you may be looking at internal sources like pilot funds or career development programs, you always do have to have your eye on that extramural funding. What one of my previous mentors at Carolina, who ran a lot of training programs, said, the money buys your time. 8, once you have support for your plan, you've got to protect your time. And this may mean saying no to some things. You may have to pull in your mentor team to help you with some of those difficult conversations, but you've got to protect your time. Also have a plan for securing resources. Time protection alone is not enough. And in the beginning, there are going to be resources that you need. And so you want to make sure that, from the onset, there are clear discussions about how those additional resources are going to be provided. 9, remember your career may take unexpected turns and do have some flexibility. What I usually recommend is, at least from my career, has come in sort of 5-year chunks of time. And each of those 5 years has looked very different. And then, last but not least, have fun. This has been the most rewarding career I could ever envision. I love what I do. I take huge joy in our research and our scientific accomplishments. And that's what, at the end of the day, makes it all worthwhile. And so I just encourage folks to find their passion and really enjoy what you're doing.
That was wonderful. I would like to thank you all so much for sharing your insight with us today. One of the reasons I love cardiology so much is the fact that we are groundbreaking and we do such novel things in our field. And it's people like the three of you that make that happen. The other thing I really enjoyed about today was I can hear the passion in all of your voices when you're talking about this, which is what I hope our listeners can find in their lives. It's always a privilege to be able to hear success stories from our colleagues who are making things happen in the field of cardiovascular research, and your tips for navigating a successful career have been amazing. Bob, Susan, and Nancy, thank you all so much for being on the Practice Made Perfect podcast. This is Allison Bailey, and thanks for joining us today. Please be sure to join us online at acc.org or on iTunes or Google Play to subscribe to Practice Made Perfect. We hope you'll join us next time as we discuss more on how practice really does make perfect.